This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 11, from the streets of Pakistan. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we get a video from our friend Taha in Pakistan, and we analyse it thoroughly and help him bowl a little bit faster and see if we can get to the bottom of whether he chucks or not. And we also talk about what the best equipment is to use for filming your training and your cricket games, as well as having a discussion about Brad Hogg's tongue and how to help players learn when learning isn't a linear process. We've got it all on this week's show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching better cricket, to playing better cricket, and to better cricket all round. My name's David Hinchliffe. And joining me, as always, are two very fine cricket coaches. The first of which is a man who I know for certain, when he gets to a roundabout and he's in any doubt, will go straight on. It's Mark Garraway, the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. Hello, Garris.
Well, there is only one way to go when you're lost, and trust me, I know what being lost is all about.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a reputation at my cricket club for being the cursed. Whoever I get a lift with, not being a driver myself, whoever I get a lift with seems to get lost. And so I try and plead innocence, but I think it's my terrible navigation skills. It must be down to, because I am the only common denominator.
It's that first time that you go and play a new ground away from home. It's just a bun fight, isn't it, from start to finish?
Are you sure this is the right way? Yeah, I think it's right. We seem to be in some kind of a gravel pit. No, it's fine. And the second coach, who I'm sure has perfect navigation skills, is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David.
Oh, Lavers, we're enjoying your echo-free show this week.
It is lovely. Just to set the scene, I have a fantastically designed new room, which is actually one of our sixth form PE areas, and I've got a nice TV in front of me, which I would guess is 72 inches. Although I'm sat that far away from it, it's a bit like having an iPad on top of a TV. It's a long way away, so I've decided to maximise the space I have, and I'm sitting on the far side of the room because I can.
Well, that big screen, it might come in a bit handy later on, so stay tuned to find out how Lavers might use that. But before we get on to that, I wanted to bring up the topic that has been floating around a little bit this week and has piqued my attention in how people learn cricket skills, sporting skills in general, I suppose, but cricket skills in particular for this show. Because learning new things is not a linear progression. It's not something where you don't know something, then you spend time learning it, and then you know it at the end of it. It doesn't quite work in that way, especially when it comes to physical skills. So I was wondering how you gauge the progress of players, especially in larger groups of players, how you gauge a player's progress, especially when there are times when they're going backwards, where they're getting frustrated with how they feel like they're not developing because they're in a time where it's not going well. So Gareth, do you have any kind of a model for judging this kind of a thing?
I wouldn't call it a model. I would call it just a sense of patience, really. And the more experienced I am because of those things that you've spoken about, David, the more I've become patient at making my judgments over whether somebody is progressing or not. I mean, if you look at the world that Sam and myself operate within mostly, we have in many of the players that we work with 5 years in which to have a positive impact through the programs that we're doing, through our own coaching, but also through the development of that individual as an individual, you know, which they're very much in charge of. So I always take a very patient approach, and that's backed up very much by the research and the understanding which is beginning to stretch around the world around how people develop. It isn't a linear process. You know, you won't get somebody at the age of 11 averaging 50 at top level cricket all the way through their career and continue that into test cricket. There will be speed bumps along the way, whether it be technical ones, whether it be an experience in their life, whether it be around their cricket and around their batting or their bowling. But you'll get that. And all of those can be used very positively to help build a bit of robustness, resilience, and all of those things that are crucial in the development of any young player who aspires to play at the top of their talent level, really. So I take a very patient point of view. You have to shift the goalposts on a regular basis, and you have to adapt to what's placed around you as a coach. So I don't write anybody off. That's something that I've learned the last few years. Never write somebody off, because people can come from left field and do some good things. And equally, people who look like they were dominant at the age of 12, 13, sometimes because of their size, lose a bit of interest in the game or get other interests outside of a game, and don't generally develop as quickly. So patience, adaptability are very crucial.
Losing interest is an interesting point to talk about, I think, Lavers. In particular, when you've got groups, when you're dealing with groups of players and they're all developing at different rates, and there are going to be guys who are going backwards, there can be times when those guys see that progression of other people and that even regression of themselves as a sign that cricket isn't the game for them and it's time to go off and do something else. Does that make it difficult to, when you're dealing with groups, does that make it difficult to keep everybody motivated individually?
Oh, absolutely, it can do. I think one of the areas, one of the messages we need to make clear is that there is a big picture, and they are on a road to within school. They're on a road towards their sixth form and ultimately leaving the school. And our objective is to have these cricketers, whether they're in, whether they're 13, 14, 15, 16, doesn't really matter. By the time they leave the school, is trying to make them the best cricketers they can be. I think most young people are aware that people will grow at different rates, and there'll be spells where they have that as an advantage, and there's spells where maybe it holds them back a little bit. So trying to make people aware that it's not just those growth patterns, but there will be other things that will accelerate and maybe slow up at different rates as well. And if you're one of those people who's maybe lagging behind, then actually you can expect a little bit of help if you stick with it in the next 6 months or year, because you will see the developments come that others have had around you. So try and keep people, especially as a group, try and keep them all aiming towards or working towards a slightly bigger target or a bigger picture. And that's, for me, obviously we talk about how good you can be when you leave, but also how good a cricketer can you be when you're 23 or 25? Because as well as aiming for their progression through to 18, I really try and keep in touch and try and make sure they're aiming towards their development for 23 as well, when other things come up in their life, but they're still trying to keep cricket as part of something they do and hopefully still enjoying the game. So yeah, I try and extend that as far as I can and keep players aware, even when they're young, that we're aiming long term rather than what you can actually do on any given day.
It's a difficult one for a coach to manage, I feel, in that you have to help people understand that, you know, just because things aren't going absolutely swimmingly, it doesn't mean it's the end of it. So that's a whole series of problems. And then you also have to understand that yourself and deal with, help players develop in the way that they're going to develop, rather than the way that you've got a list and you think players have to be doing this by this age and that by that age. That doesn't always work. It's nice to have those. It's nice to have a rule of thumb, but it's also good to realise that if someone isn't reaching those standards, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're on the scrap heap.
I've got an example of a lad at the moment who came in on a cricket scholarship at school, and he's a decent cricketer, and you know, he's a very aware cricketer. But he's really taken to his strength and conditioning program that we've got in place for him. And he's starting to produce some remarkable things from a power production point of perspective. So rather than limit him to cricket, which he may or may not have a chance on going forward, what we've done is we've also put him through a talent transfer system as well. He's gone through a series of different tests to measure his output. He's also incredibly tall, has a huge arm span and wingspan with his arms. And he is going up to Bisham Abbey in a few Saturdays' time to go and do some national talent transfer sets to see if there are other sports that his body shape and his power production can be applied into. So things such as cycling and rowing are probably the two most prominent ones that talent transfers work with. So Again, it's not just about the cricket for me, because this lad came in as a cricketer, but it was soon apparent that there could be some other areas that we could give him opportunities in that he could thrive in as well. So I think you've got to work with that individual. I know I say it every week, but there's a living example of somebody who could very well be doing some pretty special things in other sports while still playing some cricket and enjoying it in the future.
Okay, let's head into the yes-no round, finish off this section. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the questions, let's get started. First question. The central task for coaches is to free players from anxiety.
No.
No.
Second question. Good coaching is finding the answer to, when I perform at my best, what do I do?
Yes.
Third question. Sunglasses are essential for cricketers.
Yes.
Yes, when shopping.
Time now for the questions section. A couple of questions that are sent in by listeners to the show. The best question of the week, as well as getting answered by the panel, also gets a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more by heading over there. And someone who did that with much determination, he sent in this is his fourth attempt to get pretty much the same question on the show. So I had to put it on his Taha, who we mentioned last week. Taha sent some videos to us via Facebook, and he also sent in this question. I'm a 17-year-old fast bowler. I'm a bit concerned about my action because I think I chuck. I'm not really satisfied with the pace that I have, and I would like to increase it. Please, can you assess my bowling action from the videos I've attached and tell me if my action is legal and guide me as to what I should do to become a faster bowler? Thank you very much. So, yeah, we do have those videos, and we'll be putting some clips and things in the show notes to help people through. So if you can access those and have a look at those, and let's go through it, see how we can help him. So, Gareth, what have you got?
What I've got is magnificent footage. We talk about using your mobile phones to get footage. We talk about being industrious to get footage, and that's exactly what you've done. You've also taken on some of the video angles that we've talked about on the show. So well done, Taha, on that. And it is unbelievable to watch your footage from where you are practicing cricket, because if I showed, which I'm going to, some of the kids here at school, for some of them, they wouldn't believe how determined you are to hone your cricket skills, given some of the lack of facilities in relation to what this lot have around them that you've got available to you. So I've got you straight on my screen. It's only about 20 inches, not 72. but I've got you running in along a road towards a brick, which is your set of stumps. And the first point of call that I'm going to go to, before we talk about whether you chuck it, as you put it, is your left foot contact with the ground as you get into your bound. So your left foot contact with the ground, you'll note if you still it at that point that your center of gravity, your center of mass, is slightly outside the line of the center of your body. So you're leaning away to the offside of a right-handed batter at this point. And this has negative effects going forward into your action when it comes to producing pace and to putting your body in a position where you can direct your energies most effectively. So what we would look for ideally at this point, so if you could work for a little bit and try and get your left foot jump, so as you hit your bound strike to go into your jump, if you could have your center of gravity more directly over the top of your hips and over the top of your feet, then you'd be in a much better position to jump forward rather than jumping out a little bit, because it has a knock-on effect later on. Apart from that, I would say the other thing is maybe to control your arms. You've got a lot of arm swings ahead of you getting into your delivery stride. And what we look for in delivery stride is for the left heel to hit the ground, the front leg to hit the ground on the heel. And as soon as that does it, I normally pause the camera to see what line the bowling arm is on. And if we do that on your video footage, then on most of the angles, and it's not always clear, but on most of the angles, we will see that as your heel hits the ground on your front foot, that your bowling arm is already above the line of your shoulders, which means that it's ahead of itself within the bowling action. If you look at any of the world's fastest bowlers and also the world's longest javelin throwers, because they're very similar techniques, They're very similar uses of the kinetic chain. At that heel contact, that first contact with the front foot, you will see a delayed bowling or throwing arm in the case of the javelin throwers. That acts as a bit of a, that delay acts as a bit of a whip at the last moment, which is where we generate a lot of our pace from. Yours is presently a little bit too far on, and I put that down to the excessive movement in your arms prior to getting into that delivery stride. So I'd look for you maybe to control those arms as you're in your bound, and controlling them a little bit more as you go into your delivery stride, because that'll give you the delay and then a bit more whip. The last thing I would look at as well, because you've got a really good feet alignment when you get into your delivery stride. I'm liking those train tracks, those tram lines that Stephen Jones would be talking about, and he thinks that those are important, and I agree with him. I really like the way that you do that. But he also talks about a pyramid on the floor, which gives you the foundation to produce power up the body. And you lose that pyramid because your front knee breaks a little bit. So there's a bend in the front knee, and the right foot comes off of the ground. So the foundation of that pyramid isn't in place. Instead of that right foot dragging and staying somewhere near the ground, yours lifts up, and then you lose a bit of power and a bit of pace up the kinetic chain as a result. So bound strike, controlling your arms, and then getting that pyramid established at the bottom of your bowling delivery stride.
On the chucking side of things, I don't think he has to worry particularly. From the video footage, the outcome that he's actually producing is already pretty good. Yes, he wants more. He wants more pace, and I think every fast bowler in the world, if they're being honest, would always want a little bit more pace. But he's probably at a stage where he's not dealing with big alterations. He's not dealing with big additions. He's looking to make to his action. It's going to be small things he's going to be achieving. So be happy with little additions. Be happy with small gains, and probably give yourself a way that you can start to measure them going forward. So if you're going to try and make a few of the adaptations that Gareth has suggested there, try and use what you've got now as a kind of ground zero, and try and move forward by assessing your speed, assessing your control, whether it's a method of analysis you come up with yourself, so it could be qualitative or quantitative. You might have some stats or some numbers of some speed or some target practice little challenges you set yourself, but try and measure your progression over the next probably 6 months, year, 18 months if you're going to bring a few changes in, because you've obviously got quite an established action already, so it might take a little bit of time for them to come in and hopefully bring that added pace that you're after.
I think that's a good point you make, Sam, about things being generally okay. I guess we can finish this on a positive note, saying that he's doing a pretty good job already. There's things that can be improved on, and that's good. But the general overview is that he's looking pretty good. He's got a solid action that can be developed, and he's got somewhere that he can practice his bowling, and he doesn't really mind about what's going on around him, because he's got somewhere he can run in and something he can bowl at, and that shows that he's got great enthusiasm for the game, and that's got to be a good thing.
And we can talk about all the technical stuff, can't we, until the cows come home, but I'm looking at him running in and bowling along a street with a brick down. And he's charging in, and he means it, doesn't he? And he wants to bowl fast, okay? And he wants to be good. And my question really would be, whilst we've given you all of that technical stuff there, Pakistan are producing the most amazing number of fast bowlers that do exactly what you're doing, Taha, that practice in those environments that end up being absolutely fantastic at bowlers, because how many of your bowlers are injured or not able to play the game because they've been, got into trouble around match fixing or all sorts of different things? So you look at the best bowlers that have come from Pakistan, none of them are at the World Cup, yet they've still got a fantastic bowling side that do all of the things that you're doing here in the environments where they learnt their cricket like this. And there's something in it. You know, we can have all of our formalised coaching, but equally it's about kids going away and practicing their stuff in their own backyards or along the street or all of those things that ultimately will make the biggest difference. There's a book that I've talked about a couple of times called Playgrounds of the Gods, and there's a bit about Ian Healy practicing his wicket keeping up against walls around the world using a golf ball. And this is a bowling example of that. And this is where, you know, the Sri Lankans, the Pakistanis, and now a little bit the Indians are beginning to develop a whole new breed of fast bowlers that come through and do some great things on the world scene. I mean, there's no force plates or absorption here, is there, in this road that he's bowling on? Yet he's doing the same stuff that Wasim Akram would have done many years ago, and Waqar Yunus and Imran Khan and all of those guys. This is where they learn their bowling. So huge hats off to you, buddy. It's fantastic footage. You haven't got a lot to do. If you can take on one of the things that we've talked about and it helps, then that's great. But keep your enthusiasm and keep running in hard. I love it.
Next question's from Sonny. And we've gone from low tech to high tech here, because Sonny says, can someone please let me know what would be the best camcorder to record practice sessions and a full cricket game? So, Lavers, what, I guess let's speak from experience here. What do you use? What do you record? What do you not record? And what kind of equipment do you have?
Equipment-wise, I use a couple of different things. I'm just trying to think models now. There is a range of Casio cameras, which are really good high-speed cameras. And I've got one of those, which I use a lot, to be honest, especially when it comes to match performances and I'm looking for something with a bit more range that still works at high speed. So that will work quite well over probably 50, 60 metres, which is generally what we need when it comes to match situations. However, when it comes down to general stuff indoors, I will do 99% of all my coaching now through an iPhone, and the quality of the camera on there is more than suitable for what I need. I can get 120 frames a second on it. I can upload stuff instantly. I can tag people in videos instantly. I can make sure that the various people that need the videos and the notes have them within minutes, as long as I'm in a Wi-Fi area. So yeah, a lot of what I'll do now will be simply through an iPhone and the good cameras that you do get on them on the newer models.
Yeah, they're so good now on the phones, aren't they? That it's very easy to get very good quality. I guess recording a game is going to be a bit more difficult. Not only would your battery run out, but you know you haven't got much of a zoom on it.
That's the challenge.
That is the weakness that I have. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Casio cameras that Sam talks to, that there's a few things that are really beneficial about them. And the ones that we use, and I think Sam's referring to, are the Casio Exilim cameras.
Yes.
And
yeah.
They range. I've got two in front of me here that we've got in the office. So the EX-ZR300 is one that came out 2 or 3 years ago, and that's been superseded by the EX-ZR1000. And in fact, we've got a couple of O's, and they are fantastic. The great thing about them is that they do the high-speed stuff. They've got really good zoom on that you can get match play out of as well. And for such a fantastic spec of camera, they come in at really reasonable prices. So just looking at the moment on a couple of websites that I've got in front of me, in terms of pounds, they come out at £170, £180. Pounds, and really it does everything that you could ever want to get out of a camera, both in practice and in match play as well. The other good capacity for them as well is you can put in whatever amount of gigabytes on your SD card as well. So when you're filming at normal speeds, which you would do in match play mostly, you could get most of the match on a number of them, I should imagine, you can get most of the match on any of the SD cards, ranging from 8 gigabytes through to 32, which is the ones that we're operating on. And they're just fantastic things to have around for a relatively cheap price. It covers all of the bases. There are better cameras in terms of taking snaps, and I think if you talk to any photographer, they would say, I wouldn't go anywhere near a Casio, but we're not taking snaps. We're taking video. We're taking high-speed footage of bowling actions and hitting and whatever, and they do everything you need. The other thing to consider when you get one of those, if you have got an iPad, as Sam talked about earlier, is just getting an SD reader for your iPad, and then you can upload an import onto your iPad and be able to use the screen on there within a couple of the apps that we've talked about previously on the show, which is something, again, that we do. But yeah, I'm a big fan of these cameras because they don't cost a lot, So as a department, we've got four of them kicking around because you're not breaking the bank every time you get one, and it covers every base.
For recording games, there's a bit of a practical challenge there of where you're going to have it, and you know you have to make sure that it's plugged in because the battery's going to run out relatively quickly over the course of a game and things like that. So you might have to be selective about what you record.
And the reality is that unless you've got analysis systems and an analyst to record all of the stuff, you're never going to use the whole of that footage. So again, in the real world, you can have one coach maybe that's going to be working with a side. It's about choosing the bits of the game which are most relevant and relating that to your practice. So if you've done some work on somebody's bowling action in the nets or in your practices over the course of the last couple of weeks and you want to check out how much it's transferred across into gameplay, then obviously that's a good time to get some match footage. Similarly, if you're doing something on how you slip stand or whatever the case, so be really selective because ultimately it's about adding value, and just recording straight down the pitch is going to be great, but if you haven't got the capacity to review that again or to extract the information out of it, then I would be very selective about what I'm actually videoing.
Yeah, it's a lot of data to sift through, isn't it? Just on the off chance that you might see something that not many people have got that kind of time to go through all that.
Correct. So make it link in with your coaching and you'll go fine.
And of course, when it comes to training, there's always the pitch vision videos that are very easy to set up, and you can have those running while you're doing your coaching, and that provides lots of the instant feedback that you can get and also be able to not have to worry about all the extra problems of editing the videos afterwards because it all slices and dices them neatly for you. So that's a nice option.
On the video stuff, it was brilliant to get some videos posted to me this week, which came from the article that I put on the site last week around wicketkeeping, and people have been sending me little excerpts of them doing that drill and actually adapting and making that drill even better, which is fantastic to see. So there's been some good use of video, not just from Taha in the previous question, but also from some of our listeners and some of our readers.
Okay, so it's Soapbox time, and this week it's David. So, David, you've got 60 seconds to rant and rave about whatever it is this week that's been getting to you. So, off you go.
I did have a topic for this, and I often struggle to think of a topic for this. And then when I do think of one, I'll often forget it. And the reason I forget is because I'm a human being, and human beings forget things all the time. It's a pretty terrible flaw in the human operating system that we're really bad, really good at having ideas, but we're really terrible at holding ideas, and that means we need to have a system in place that backs up our brain and allows our brain to do the creative, clever, exciting, fresh stuff, and then all the boring stuff about remembering things can be done in some other way. And I think that's important, especially these days with the discussion about the way that data works and working on instinct and using data to back up instinct and all that kind of thing. It's a lot more complicated than simply saying we shouldn't use data because it makes people into robots, and it's a lot more complicated than saying people should just work on instinct all the time. Do what your brain's good at and let data do the rest. And that is the end of the show for another week. We are about to head off again to do our relevant, important cricketing jobs. But before quite we do that, we're going to decide on a winner of the competition, this week's competition, which is a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions that we had that were sent in was Taha's question about his legal bowling action and how to bowl faster. And we had Sonny's question about recording his practice sessions and a cricket game. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, this week I'm going to go for Taha because I think his footage is absolutely brilliant. It also gives us a really good understanding of where our messages go to and where the interest lies around the world and who's using our stuff. So I think it's almost a great snapshot of what this show is about. So Taha, you are this week's winner.
Congratulations, Taha. You win an online coaching course. You can head over to pitchvision.com/academy for details on what courses you can choose. Pick one from there. That's great. Now, if someone else wanted to send in their question to us and get it answered and win that prize, Gareth, how could they get in touch with us?
Well, they could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also get us through Twitter at PitchVisionAcad is our Twitter handle. And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. We had a silly video that went a bit viral this week, and or the end of last week, I should say. And over 1.3 million people watched it, and it was very silly and only very vaguely related to cricket. So if you want to have a bit of a laugh and watch a 30-second video about a Russian guy in a nightclub talking about cricket, then go and take a look at that. If you want to listen to this show every week, where we talk more about cricket than we do about Russian guys in nightclubs, then you can subscribe by using your favourite podcasting app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy and finding us in there. Or indeed, you can do it the old school way, and you can go to the pitchvision.com/academy website and click on the podcast link for a way to stream, or a way to download the file, or a way to get the old school RSS feed. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, fellas.
I actually remember when I played in Australia, Brad Hogg used to have a sunglass deal with Oakley, I think it was. And this is when he was a lot younger and he just played a test for Australia. And he was at our club and he turned up to training once and he was livid. And Oakley offered him a contract. They offered him two pairs of match wear sunglasses, but they didn't offer him any casual sunglasses. And he was he just went berserk. I can't believe it. He had no interest in the match sunglasses. He wanted all that. He wanted a couple of pairs of casual ones. He said he'd happily just send them back, the matchwear ones, the M frames and stuff. He just wanted some casual ones. He ended up leaving them, going to Adidas, just because they wouldn't give him any sunnies that he could wear down the beach.
And they're like, my answer. That is my answer in a nutshell. Did Brad Hogg, when he got really angry, have his tongue out? Because he seems to have his tongue out all of the time when he bowls.
When he got angry, he used to do exercise.
Did he?
He'd do his word search book. He had like a word search and crossword puzzle book, which he did a lot when he wasn't out batting or bowling, which he generally was on the field most of the time, because back then he scored a hell of a lot of runs at grade cricket as well.
But if not,
he would either be sticking his tongue out doing his word search book or puzzle book or whatever it was, or he would be doing press ups or glute bridges or anything. Not, he wouldn't be sitting still and his tongue would be out, yeah.
We used to walk past him wherever he was and just go, put it away, it's just uncouth. Kalina, he didn't used to get the funny side of it, but we always used to have to talk about it.